Good evening. This is the NLA Hams Net. My name is Terry from Colorado. My call sign is K-I-0-R-E. You can look it up at any time. This net is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight or Eastern Time. We talk about things that are NLA-ish and hamish. Last week we talked a little bit about feed lines and coaxial cables and characteristic impedance. And I just want to let everybody know that there's a characteristic impedance. It's mentioned on page 4-9 at the bottom, or at the bottom of the characteristic impedance sheet. It's just how much resistance or impedance that line has for a particular frequency. Most ham radio uses have a characteristic impedance of 50 ohms. Coaxial cables for video and cable television are 75 ohms. And you'll notice the difference if you try and use a video or cable as a feed line to a ham radio antenna. And then open wire feed lines have a characteristic impedance of 300 to 450 ohms. We kind of covered that, but I glossed over it last time. Today, as promised, I want to talk about standing wave ratio. And they've got some things that, like in that characteristic impedance, you can see it gives a description about how you can tell about what that impedance really means. And they say take a big, open, wide straw and a little bitty straw. And when you put a puff of air through them, poof, with them in your mouth, you can tell that it's much harder to get a big puff through the little straw than it is the big straw. And that's kind of a characteristic impedance for the particular frequency that you're doing. But let's go a little further. The power carried in a feed line is transferred completely to a load, such as an antenna. When the load and the feed line impedance are identical or matched, so when it's matched or when they're identical, all of the power put out by the transmitter will go down the feed line and enter the antenna, and you don't have any problems. Very rare. It's an ideal case, and it's tough to get it to that. Okay, if the feed line and load impedance do not match, some of the power is reflected by the load. Power traveling forward or toward the load is forward power, and power reflected by the load is reflected power. The greater the difference between the feed line and load impedances, the more power is reflected by the load. In the worst case, where the feed line is connected to or terminated in an open or short circuit, all of the forward power is reflected. And I can speak from experience, if you do it wrong and you forget something, you can blow out your finals. And I've done that. I've also blown out the antenna tour, which we're going to talk a little more about this. Reflected and forward power traveling in opposite directions create a stationary wave-like interference pattern in the feed line called a standing wave. And now we come to the definition of what a standing wave is. The ratio of the maximum value to the minimum value of the interference pattern is called the standing wave ratio, or SWR. Some people try to make an acronym out of it called SWR. Most hams will look at you funny if you say SWR. Wait until you get to know a particular ham before you try and tell him SWR. Use SWR, standing wave ratio. So there's power going towards an antenna being carried by the feed line. When it hits the antenna, if the antenna isn't tuned to the same frequency, it can send part of that voltage back or part of that power back. It's actually power, not voltage. And that's called a reverse wave. And lots of times when you're doing SWRs, you're measuring SWRs, you're measuring the voltage at a particular point, which is ESWR, and you take and you measure the forward current and then the back, the reverse current, and you compare the two. Some of them, you just put it up there and turn it on, and you're getting your swerve. Because it's most commonly they take, because the antenna is usually up high, and the feed line comes down to the back of the transmitter, you disconnect the feed line, and you put a meter in between the feed line and the transmitter. And when you do that, you can measure the SWRs going out the feed line up to the antenna and see what the SWRs are. Because SWR is determined by the proportion of forward and reflected power, SWR in an antenna system is also a measure of how well the antenna and feed line impedances are matched. In fact, SWR is equal to the ratio of antenna to feed line or feed line to antenna impedances, whichever ratio is greater than 1. When there is no reflected power, there is no interference pattern, and the SWR is 1:1, which we read as 1:1.
Yeah, oh, it's good.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Does somebody have a comment? Okay, my imagination. SWR greater than 1:1 is called an impedance mismatch, or just a mismatch. Since an antenna's feed point impedance changes with frequency, while that of the feed line does not, SWR also changes with frequency, as shown in Figure 4.8. Now, I'd like to talk about Figure 4.8 on page 4-10. It shows a curve with the bulge that's bulging down at about the bottom of the curve is 28.4 megahertz. And it's just a typical SWR curve. Because the frequency is changing, a particular antenna might be tuned to a particular frequency. Feed line doesn't care. As long as you're pushing 50 ohms or 300 ohms or 450 ohms into it, the feed line is happy. The length of the feed line can occasionally get figured into the whole scheme of things, but normally it isn't. So you have this antenna. It's tuned to 28.024 megahertz. At that point, you've got about a 1.25:1 SWR, standing wave ratio. That means that you're getting back, which one of them is mismatched, and it's to the tune of 1/4 of your power, roughly, of what you're putting out. So there's a standing wave inside of there bouncing back and forth, and you're losing power with that standing wave. And I've been trying to think about how that might explain, how I might explain that. And I think of the places around the Earth that have very long tides. In other words, at low tide, it's just a river flowing out to the ocean. But when high tide comes, the flow of the water is actually reversed. And for part of that way, it's just water standing. It's not going anywhere. There's waves on it, but as the ocean comes back into the river, but the water really isn't going anywhere. And it might be several hundred feet or even a mile where that flow is interrupted depending upon what the power is. That's a similar thing. You're wasting power that the transmitter is developing in just maintaining that wave. Eventually the wave would just kind of decay, but you keep adding to it, and some of your power is there to sustain that standing wave. That's not a good thing. You want all the power to go down the feed line and out the antenna, and then your antenna works better. Most ham radios, it mentions, are they usually work from 1:1 ratio to about a 2-to-1 ratio. Some of them will work even more. I'll get into that in a minute. Now, this graph says that at about 28.1 megahertz, the antenna that they have it hooked to has an SWR of about 1.75 to 1. At 28.5 megahertz, so all the way to the right, it has about a 2-to-1 ratio, maybe just a 2.25 to 1. So that antenna works much better at transferring power down at that very lowest part of the dip. The whole bottom axis of the graph is 1-to-1 ratio. All the power is being transferred from the transmitter into the antenna. That's what you want. And it's good from about 28.2 to 28.3. Antenna transfers most of the energy into the atmosphere. Most of the energy is transferred. You got a match, and that's good. The maximum amount of power that can be transferred out to the antenna is going out to the antenna and being transmitted over the atmosphere. So that's a good thing. Why does this number SWR matter? Low SWR indicates the efficient transfer of power from the feed line because less power is reflected by the antenna. Low SWR also reduces losses in the feed line, resulting from reflected power in the feed line traveling back and forth between the antenna and the transmitter. With each pass through the feed line, some of the power is transferred to the antenna, but some is also lost as heat. And as SWR increases, more power is reflected and more power is lost. Okay, do we have a question there? I hear some sound. Another effect of high SWR is that the interference pattern causes voltages to increase in the feed line and at the transmitter's output where the feed line is connected. The higher voltages can damage a transmitter's output circuits. Most amateur transmitting equipment is designed to work at full power with an SWR of 2-to-1 or lower. SWR greater than 2-to-1 may cause the transmitter's protection circuits to reduce power automatically to avoid damage to the output transistors. What causes a high SWR? Well, antennas that are much too short or too long for the frequency being used often have extreme feed point impedances, causing high SWRs. A faulty feed line or a feed line connectors that can also raise SWR. Erratic SWR usually indicates a loose connection in the feed line or the antenna. To correct high SWRs not caused by a fault, an impedance matching device is used. This device is called a transmatch, an impedance matcher, or an antenna tuner. And I think I see antenna tuner more than anything else. I guess the transmatch folks are trying to make it sound pretty important. It is important, but they sound a little better than what they need to be. The antenna tuner is typically connected at the output of the transmitter. Now, I'll tell you something that I did that I was really stupid, and I've told everyone this before. When I had my HF radio, I had a 40-meter dipole, and on 40 meters, that thing sung. I talked to Russia on it. But I wanted to see if I couldn't tune it up at 160 meters. Bad news. Now, this HF radio, when I bought it, had an antenna tuner inside of it, and it would automatically tune. You just push the auto-tune button, and it would try different levels of capacitance or inductance until it got the SWRs down to a reasonable amount. Well, one time I tried to load it up on 160, and it rattled and rattled because it's putting relays in and out. And I hit it to see what the SWR was, and it blew out the antenna tuner. And the radio was pretty much useless and it still sits in the box behind me. Unfortunate. I need to get it fixed. And I will someday, as funds allow. Could I go in there and fix myself? Yeah, I could probably go in and fix it, but it would take a lot of effort, and I don't have the time at the moment. But anyway, I want to caution everybody that wants to get an antenna that's built for the frequency band that you're using. And a 40-meter antenna is not going to work on 80 meters or 160 meters. Sometimes it'll work on 80 meters, but that's not a good match. You want to get an antenna that matches. You want to set up the SWRs and see where your antenna is at so you know what kind of signal you're putting out. And you're not heating up the antenna or the feed line. No sense in heating the feed line or using a bunch of electricity just to heat a feed line when what you want to do is communicate using RF over long distances. Do I have any questions?
This is KC3HVA. Just one comment. This has come up in the past when people are buying a little handheld transceiver like the Bofang, and to conserve money, they want to use an existing antenna they might have laying around, like from an old CB radio, and it may be that the terminal on that cable appears to fit with their little handheld or their base station they just bought, but they should be cautioned not to use that because it's not tuned to the frequency bands they're going to use. And if they want to play with things like that, they have to have a standing wave meter in there and start on very low power to see if they're at all compatible. Just a thought. Over.
As usual, Jan, you're absolutely right. The CB band is down around, 27 megahertz? And, yes, and the ham band is up around 28.5 to 29 megahertz, somewhere in that vicinity. And if you try and put an antenna built for CB on a ham station, your SWRs will look out of whack. Now, sometimes if you shorten the antenna a little bit or you change the capacitance on it or you change the inductance on it, sometimes you can make it resonate in the ham band a little better. But the only way you're going to know is to put an SWR meter in there and tune it up. Try the things that you think will shorten it up and make it work for you. Let the SWR meter be your guide as to how you're doing. When I put up my 40-meter dipole, I had to adjust the length, and there's several times where I used a conductive clamp to clamp it at a certain length, and then I go down and check it, and I say, looks like if I moved this one in a little bit or I let that one out a little bit, I'd get a better SWR, and I did it until I got a really good SWR. It was flat against the band. Some SWR graphs are like the one on figure 4.8 in the book, but others lots of times can go all the way across the band, and they're just a little shallow U instead of like a big dip like this one is. And those are better in some respects. Usually they're slightly higher SWRs, and so whereas the dip on this one gets down to about 1.15 or 1.20, something like that, maybe the one that covers the entire band might be 1.55 or 1.5:1 for most of the band. It's a really interesting thing to plot it out. And there are SWR meters that will show a graph just like that on the screen. You turn it on. They cost a little more, But they're really nice when you have an unknown antenna that you want to see what it looks like. And so it'll tell you, on this band, your graph's going to look like this, and on this band, your graph's going to look like that. And they're a lot of fun to play with because you can take an unknown antenna, make some changes to it to bring down the SWRs, and then all of a sudden the antenna is working on your ham band, and you got it pretty cheap because somebody threw it away thinking it didn't work very well. So I've done a little bit of tinkering, and that's what ham radio is all about. Go do the tinkering. Learn how to do some of this stuff. And SWR is where you're going to put in a little bit of time to give you a chance to understand what your antenna is doing. Excuse me. Okay. Are there any other questions on SWRs? The standing wave ratio, SWR, is very important. And the more you take a look at it, the better you can tell what your antenna is doing. And if you go out and you get it all set up and it's working great, and all of a sudden it's not working anymore, what are you going to check? We'll see if any moisture has gotten into any of the connectors anywhere along the feed line or up at the antenna. A lot of people don't know that when you put up a ham antenna, one of the things you want to do is make a little loop right before where it goes into the antenna. And why do you do that? You use that as like what's called a drip loop. So your moisture goes down by gravity. It gets to the bottom of the loop, and it falls off. And if you don't do that, sometimes it can flow back up. It'll back up, or it'll freeze on there, and your drip kind of works its way by freezing back into your connector and shorts out your circuit, and all of a sudden your SWRs are up at 3-1, and you don't know why. So there's all kinds of little things like that. Also, when you go in where the feed line comes into the house, say, you want to put a little dip. And I am amazed that when I look up at a lot of antennas installations, like on cell phone towers, you look up there, and lots of times you'll see a loop or a dip, just a little U, where the water, they built for the water to come off. And sometimes you see them and sometimes you don't. But watch for it. You now know what that's for and why that little loop or that little dip is there. What else can I talk about SWRs and antenna feed lines and power transfers? Standing waves, that's what we're talking about, standing wave ratio. Okay. The next thing is practical antenna systems. That didn't take as long as, SWRs didn't take as long as I thought it would. I'm sure I'm skipping over a lot of the stuff, but SWRs need to be experienced to get an idea. You can make a wire antenna out of anything. Just about. But before you key up on it, check the SWR and make sure it's going to load up like you think it will. You can actually take a random wire and hang it off of something. You can put it across a tree, shoot it over the tree with a little slingshot, and that random wire will act as an antenna. You can do different things to it to make it work right, but you can lengthen it. You could shorten it. You can actually put some inductance in it to make it look longer, or some capacitance in it to make it look shorter. And you do what you need to do to make it work and get that SWR reading down to where it doesn't hurt your transmitter. And most of the energy going out to your transmitter is going out to the antenna and out to the being on air and facilitating your communications. So the next thing they talk about is Chapter 4.4, Practical Antenna Systems. And they talk about the distance, the difference between dipoles and ground planes. Do I have any questions or anybody want to make a comment? The silence was deafening. The simplest type of antenna is a dipole, meaning essentially two electrical parts. Dipoles are made from a straight conductor of wire or tubing, one-half wavelength, and it has one-half lambda. Lambda is the Greek letter that we use for wavelength. So it's one-half wavelength long with a feed point somewhere along the antenna, usually in the middle. Dipoles are easy to make, easy to use, and work quite well in a variety of environments. And I will say that. I had an inverted V for one tuned to using an SWR meter, tuned to, what is it, 10-meter band, which is 29 megahertz. And I had it in an inverted V. I just tacked it up behind the radio on the side of the house. And then I checked the SWRs, and if it was too low, the SWRs were tuned up too low, then I would cut off a small snippet and go check it again. And I cut maybe 6 inches off the wire, and I got that wire. It's just this heavy-duty clear speaker wire, and I just cut down the center insulation and spread it apart and put it up on the side of the house with about a 90-degree V, inverted V. And that thing worked like a champ. I had a dipole antenna that I had, I'd spread one pole out this way and one pole out this way with two trees. The difference in them was about 110, 120 degrees, something like that. They weren't straight out. Usually on a dipole, you want it one going one way and one the other lead going the other way, 180 degrees out in one in one direction and one in the opposite direction, so 180 degrees apart. I didn't have a tree at 180 degrees, so I had to use 120 degrees. But then I would haul it up with a piece of rope on an insulator, and I would fold the wire over and attach it to itself. And I kept folding, running it up to the tree with a rope hanging over one limb. I'd pull it up to where it's supposed to be, tie it off, check the SWR, and then I'd let it back down, and I'd either change the loop. I'd make it longer or shorter. When I found what I wanted, then I took it, and I wrapped the wire and coiled it around the main part of the antenna. And lo and behold, it worked like a champ. It was great. And then I had another antenna that I hooked to that thing. And it was a dual band VHF and UHF. And so there's lots of things you can do. And the fun part is knowing that you are tuning the antenna, making it shorter, making it longer, adding capacitance, adding inductance, taking away inductance or taking away capacitance. And just by cutting an antenna to a different length, you can change what frequency it works best upon. And how do you confirm it? Use SWR, an SWR meter. And it's a lot of fun to experiment, because really you can take your bed springs, put them out there, and hook one part up to the center of the feed line and then another part to a different part of the bed springs. And you can play with that thing, because bed springs are coils. So a coil and inductor tends to make it look longer, and capacitance tends to make the thing look shorter. And you can do all kinds of things by cutting different pieces of the bed spring, or just extending pieces of the bed spring, or shorting out a bed spring. To tune a J-pole, you have a tuning bar that goes across. A J-pole looks like a big J with a short part and a long part. So think of a J. And then it has usually at the bottom a very quick turn to go from one to the other. And then it has a tuning bar that you can adjust the tuning bar up or down. By adjusting that tuning bar up or down, you end up tuning it to a particular frequency. I also knew a person, Bart Jr.'s here, would make these, they would take some TV ladder line or open line or whatever you want to call it, TV line, and it has two conductors. They would turn that into a J-pole by soldering down at the bottom and having one piece go up one side and one the other. And then they put a tap in there and tune it up to the center of the VHF band. And the idea was you could roll it up into your pack, keep it in the back of your pack, and then when you got ready to transmit, you would take the whole J-pole and throw it up into a tree and get it to stay up there. And once you did, you'd have a piece of feed line that you could feed it, and you could talk with this big antenna that was actually just a piece of TV cable hanging from the tree. I'd encourage everybody to experiment with different things. They write, there have been people who wrote books, entire books, about antenna theory and antenna practice. And it's just a lot of fun to play with the antennas. Everybody gets wowed with how many memories a radio has and whether it talks VHF, UHF, if it has the aviation bands or the FM bands or the weather bands on it. But the real fun is, what are you going to feed? What's the antenna going to be that you're going to feed this into? And lots of times it's a lot more fun to play with the antenna because you can see immense gains where no matter what antenna you put on a handheld, it doesn't give you what a piece of wire up in the tree will give you if it's tuned right. So there you go. That's my my idea of working with this stuff. Any questions so far? Okay, a dipole is essentially two electrical parts, and each part is about one-half wavelength or one-half lambda long with a feed point somewhere along the antenna, usually in the middle. Dipoles are easy to make, easy to use, and work quite well in a variety of environments. Most are oriented horizontally, particularly on the lower frequency bands, and radiate a horizontally polarized signal. We talked about polarized signals a couple of weeks back. Dipoles can also be installed vertically, sloping or even drooping from a single support in the middle. The inverted V, or inverted in a capital V, figure 4.9 shows the central portion of a typical wire dipole. And it just has an insulator in the middle and some ladder line coming up to it. And one side of the ladder line is hooked to one side of the antenna halfway, and the other side of the antenna is hooked to the other end of the radio frequency. If you think about what that's doing, current is both going up and down in that ladder line. When one side's going up, the other side's going down, and vice versa. So what you're doing is you're putting one, you've got two points of highest voltage running up and down each side of the antenna. And that's kind of how they propagate the radio waves. It's running backwards. And since it's half wave, it tends to put it out there in a very efficient way. Dipoles are great antennas, and you can make them dirt cheap if you have some wire and you have an SWR meter to ensure that you get it tuned. A dipole radiates strongest broadside to the axis of the dipole. So if I hang it on this tree over here and run it 180 degrees out the other direction, and then in the middle I load it up with an insulator and the feed line to the radio, it's your best signal on that is going to be off to the sides of the dipole. And if the dipole is oriented, let's say it's the side of the dipole is oriented north and south, your radio signal is going to be strongest north and south. Got a beautiful picture on figure 4.10 that kind of shows that. And that's very true. When I took my 40-meter antenna and talked to Russia, I went and got a globe, and I kind of mapped out what the angle was on my antenna. And lo and behold, it kind of reflected towards Russia. Went up over the North Atlantic and landed in Russia. So it's a lot of fun. Let's see. Another popular antenna is the ground plane antenna. The most common type of ground plane antenna is one half of a dipole, a quarter wavelength long, 1/4 lambda, with the missing portion made up by an electrical mirror called the ground plane, which is made from sheet metal or a screen of wire called radials. The ground plane is generally 1/4 wavelength long with the feed point at the base of the antenna, as shown in figure 4.11. And that's on the next page, and there you can see it. And they show, what if you take a just a piece of sheet metal and put it on the bottom? Great. What works better is you have all these radials coming off the bottom. So sometimes you'll see antennas standing straight up, and they'll have radials along the bottom, and you'll say, well, what are those for? Well, as the signal runs up and down that antenna, when they start going out into space, they're bouncing off of that ground plane and reinforcing the signal that's coming out of the side of the antenna. Now, that's simplifying it a little bit much, but that's exactly what happens. And there's different things you can do that ground plane. If it's different if you bend the ground plane down to what's called a disc cone. Use a short little transmitting antenna, the center ground plane antenna. It's just a pole going up. And then you take your ground plane and you slope them at 45 degrees. You tend to get a little more reflection out into the way that antenna is going. There's a lot of stuff with antennas. One conductor of the feed line is connected to the antenna, the other to the ground plane. The length of the ground plane is half that of a dipole. It's often estimated as the length in feet equals 234. So 234 divided by the frequency in megahertz. And that is one of the questions on your test. So how did I get that 40 meter? I used that formula right there. And I said, this is what I need for my antenna. And I said, they need to be about 34, 37 feet long. I can't remember what I used. And that got me close enough to where I could identify what frequency it was truly tuning up on. And then I lengthened or shortened the individual poles of the antenna until that SWR said 1:1 or 1.5:1 or something less. And got it working like it should. So it's good to remember that. The length in feet, the length of a ground plane is half that of a dipole and is often estimated as the length in feet equals 234 divided by the frequency in megahertz. And I encourage you as homework to go ahead and work that formula and see if you come out with what they have. On the next page, 412, they say, how long is that dipole? And on the dipole, use the length in feet equals 468 divided by the frequency in megahertz. Or the length equals 468 divided by the frequency. And then they go through a 50 megahertz antenna, 6-meter band. Dipole length is calculated as 468 divided by 50, and they use 0.1. So it equals 112 inches long, 9.33 feet. So that's how you get close, and that's what I was talking about. So I think we're just about out of time. Is there anybody that has a question or a comment or a suggestion or a criticism? Please call now.
This is KC3HVA. Just one or two little comments. I have an unbalanced line in that it drives about a third of the way from one end to the other rather than right in the middle. And it came with a 4-to-1 ballum to match the impedance of the antenna to the cable. And they recommend that you drop the transmitting cable away almost perpendicular to the antenna. And that's basically a drip loop then. And since I started out over my yard and crossed my driveway and stuff, I was able to bring that cable just through a big loop of maybe 20 feet long or so and back to a little pole I stuck up in my little trees and into the house. So I have a drip loop, and I can also leave the antenna at about 90 degrees. So you get all kinds of good things. Now, that's supposed to be a antenna, what's called a dipole, that will do anywhere from 2 to 80 meters without retuning the antenna. I have not checked it with the standing wave meter yet to see if that's true. But if so, it makes it easy to use. You can switch bands without retuning each time. Over.
Wow, nice little antenna there, Jan. K3HVA. I admire your desire to go out there and experiment a little bit and use stuff that isn't necessarily just bought off the shelf. And I applaud your experimentation, as I would any ham that's out there experimenting. Because after all, these are home stuff, the home radio. It's amateur. And you're encouraged to experiment a little bit and see what you got going. And with that, I say our time is up, and we should get out of here and allow the next web or next net to start. This is Terry from Colorado, KI0RE. This net, the NLA Hams net, is held every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And we're grateful for all the input that everybody had. We thank you for listening, and I hope this helped you. And you can look up my address at any time on the net, and you're welcome to send me email. So I'll leave it at that. This is KI0RE, and we're closing the net.
Thank you, Terry.